awake from my nap, I'm sure those pieces of meat will be out there in the marketplace. That's reality for you. Quick and efficient. He tore up a handful of grass and toyed with its softness a while. Then he stubbed his cigarette, and with a deep sigh, expelled all the smoke left in his lungs. When he closed his eyes, the grasshopper's wings sounded much louder in the darkness. The vet was overtaken by the illusion that huge grasshoppers the size of bullfrogs were leaping all around him. Maybe the world was like a revolving door, it occurred to him as his consciousness was fading away. And which section you ended up in was just a matter of where your foot happened to fall. There were tigers in one section, but no tigers in another. Maybe it was as simple as that. And there was no logical continuity from one section to another. And it was precisely because of this lack of logical continuity that choices didn't mean very much. Wasn't that why he couldn't feel the gap between one world and another? But that was as far as his thoughts would go. He wasn't able to think more deeply than that. The fatigue in his body was as heavy and suffocating as a sodden blanket. No more thoughts came to him, and he just lay there, inhaling the aroma of the grass, listening to the grasshopper's wings, and feeling through his skin the dense membrane of shadow that covered him. And in the end, his mind was sucked into the deep sleep of afternoon. The transport ship cut its engines as ordered and soon came to a standstill on the surface of the ocean. There was less than one chance in 10,000 that it would outrun such a swift, modern submarine. The submarine's deck gun and machine gun were still trained on the transport ship, its crew in a state of readiness to attack. Yet, a strange sense of tranquility hovered over the two ships. The submarine's crew stood in full view on deck, lined up and watching the transport ship with an air of having time to kill. Many of them had not even bothered to strap on battle helmets. There was hardly any wind that summer afternoon, and now, with both engines cut, the only sound was the languid slap of waves against the two ships' hulls. The transport ship signaled to the submarine, "We are a transport ship carrying unarmed civilians. We have neither munitions nor military personnel on board. We have few lifeboats." The submarine's response was brusque. "That is not our problem. Evacuation or no, we commence firing in precisely 10 minutes. This ended the exchange of messages between the two ships. The captain of the transport ship decided not to convey the communication to his passengers. What good would it do? A few of them might be lucky enough to survive, but most would be dragged to the bottom of the sea with this miserable old washtub. The captain longed for one last drink, but the whiskey bottle, some fine old scotch he had been saving, was in a desk drawer in his cabin, and there was no time to get it now. He took off his hat and looked up at the sky, hoping that through some miracle a squadron of Japanese fighter planes might suddenly appear there. But this was not to be a day for miracles. The captain had done all he could. He thought about his whiskey again. As the 10-minute grace period was running out, strange movements began on the deck of the submarine. There were hurried exchanges among the officers lined up on the conning tower deck, and one of the officers scrambled down to the main deck and ran among the crew, shouting orders of some kind. Wherever he went, ripples of movement spread among the men at their battle stations. One sailor shook his head from side to side and punched the barrel of the deck gun with a clenched fist. Another took his helmet off and stared up at the sky. The men's actions might have been the expression of anger or joy or disappointment or excitement. The passengers on the transport ship found it impossible to tell what was happening or what this was leading to. Like an audience watching a pantomime for which there was no program, but which contained a very important message, they held their breaths and kept their eyes fixed on the sailor's every movement, hoping to find some small hint of meaning. Eventually, the waves of confusion that had spread among the sailors began to subside, and in response to an order from the bridge, the shells were removed from the deck gun with great dispatch. The men turned cranks and swung the barrel away from the transport ship until the gun was pointing straight ahead again. Then they plugged the horrid black hole of the muzzle. The gun shells were returned below decks, and the crew ran for the hatches. In contrast to their earlier movements, they did everything now with speed and efficiency. There was no chatting or wasted motion. The submarine's engines started with a definite growl, and at almost the same moment the siren screeched to signal, "All hands below decks!" The submarine began to move forward, and a moment later it was plunging downward, churning up a great white patch of foam, as if it had hardly been able to wait for the men to get below and fasten the hatches. A membrane of seawater swallowed the long, narrow deck from front to rear. The guns sank below the